big thank you to all of you, to your dean, Paul, for inviting me to break bread with you and sharing the good news with you. It's nice to be here. Thank you. Big thanks to Tim Kingsley, Reverend Tim, who guided me around this morning, make sure I was in the right place, helped me get here. Big thanks to Joe Ward, who's running the climate justice group here, doing some fantastic work, all of you, leading the Episcopal Church in Minnesota in this work. Do you remember back in the mid-90s here in Minnesota when we were wrangling desperately about whether to allow motors in the Boundary Waters and Voyageurs National Park? It was all the rage every day, at least every Sunday. It seemed there was another article in the paper with a map of the Boundary Waters and the Voyageurs National Park about which portages and which lakes, and there were all of our representatives here and in Washington were wrangling about it, and Paul Wellstone created a whole mediation process that lasted 9 months with 30 meetings, desperately big factions on either side, yes motors, no motors. And then one Sunday, political cartoon came out in the newspaper. Maybe you saw it. I don't remember which paper it was. Big, iconic picture of the state of Minnesota. You know the outline so well. That little notch of Lake of the Woods and the straight part that borders South Dakota. And we can all see it right in our mind. And the whole thing was out there on this, filled up almost the whole frame of the cartoon. And up at the top was the little part of the Boundary Waters with the little hash marks like you see on maps and an arrow with a little squiggly no motor use. And then across the state, motor use. The drawer of the cartoon had brilliantly reframed the conversation, reminding us that there was a bigger picture than just that little set of lakes up there along the border. That, I think, is what Jesus does for his hearers today in this gospel reading. He makes a kind of political cartoon. I invite you to think about this from the humorous side of point of view. This is another one of those places in the scriptures where it's funny. I think we get this pastiche of this great Pharisee, big, bold, big-chested Pharisee right there in the front row. The angle's probably from right here, and the Pharisee fills up almost the whole frame. And then way in the background, the little tax collector tucked away in the far reaches of the temple. And the big Pharisee is naming off, I did this for you, I did this for you, I did this for you. I'm not like this person, I'm not like this person. All in an effort to get closer to God, who already knows all those things, right? Just hilarious. When I was in high school, I had a couple of guys in the, I went to an all-boys school, it was a prep school, and these two fellas, Bill and John, they lived together. They were fantastic. They were brilliant, and they were socially perfect. And John was kind of the social person. He was at all the dances. He ran the dances. He was on all the committees. On all the social committees. He was on the football team. He was kind of the jock, the best, the big man around campus, spirituals, fan club. And Bill was the academic. He was always right at the top of the class, brilliant in all A's, president of every important group on campus, got the top medal of the school, gave the devotionals, always preached a good devotional in chapel. They were perfect. And some of us lowly ones in the lower rungs of the ladder got our English teacher, not the AP English teacher, the lowly English teacher, who was head of the reggae committee. We got him to get his guitar and be the Toastmaster for the senior banquet. And he was great. And he wrote a song about the whole class, went through all 120 of us, saying some line in his little ditty. And when he got to Bill and John, about three quarters of the way through, he said, "Oh, and Bill and John, well, they're perfect. Not much to say about them." And then a ding on the guitar. A little wake-up call for Bill and John. Bill and John standing around at the senior party after graduation just by themselves. All those committees and great grades, and doesn't really matter post-graduation. Jesus says, "Do you want to be right, or do you want to be in relationship?" Jesus tells this, and Luke reminds us that Jesus is telling this to people who thought themselves righteous and viewed others with contempt. Jesus is not telling this parable for the tax collector sitting humbly in the back pew. He's telling it to us who tend to put our accomplishments up there and think well of ourselves. But I think this parable can speak to more than just that person. I think we can widen the frame. I think Jesus invites us to widen the frame and to look at that tax collector who is first an example of coming into the presence of God, being humble and coming before God. But secondly, maybe living by the same broken system and rules that the Pharisee is. Because does that tax collector actually walk out the door of the temple renewed and invigorated? Or does he walk out of the temple bowed down and humble and unable to lift his head and unable to change the things that he's doing that he was so sorry about? That's the place that many of us find ourselves in the midst of the largest crisis to face the human species that we know, climate change and the degradation to our world, our earth, our planet, our natural systems that sustain us. But Jesus says we can do something about that. We have some steps that we can take. We can escape that system that those two live in. First, we can acknowledge that climate change exists. This is not, do I believe in climate change? Believe is something that we do with things that we don't have any way of knowing about. Acknowledging the science, the facts of climate change, is something we do with things that we can learn about, like gravity. No one would say, do I believe in gravity? Well, I can find out for myself. We can learn and we can discover. We know that some have denied climate change for a long time. In the news most recently, 5 days ago, the state of New York taking ExxonMobil to suit because they did not disclose the science that they knew back in the 80s that climate change existed, and they actually predicted within 10 parts per million exactly how many parts per million of carbon would be in the atmosphere today. But they suppressed it. Why do we suppress that kind of information? Well, you suppress it out of fear, out of just unbelievable terror of what we have been able to do to the planet. But people of Jesus are not people of fear. We are people of hope. We can say no to the fear because we know that God is with us. And we can see, even in the smallest little seed planted in the crack in the sidewalk that grows and can, with enough sunlight and enough water, break up that concrete. We know that Jesus is planted in us. We are people of hope. Some of the folks who know the most about climate change are the most despairing. They know the science the most. Maybe some of you are those people. And you think, what's the use? I can't do anything. It's just overwhelming. I can't get my arms around it, right? But we are people of hope, and we do not know all of the new things that Christ is doing in us and through us to reclaim the garden that we've lost. And so the second thing we can do after we acknowledge, we can widen that frame to learning. We can learn more about what is this crisis and how might I respond to it? There's just a plethora of information coming out. Great documentary films, terrific books, great speakers. Slowly, everybody's turning to this, and the gifts that they're bringing to this are fantastic, just amazing things we can learn. And the more we learn, the more equipped we are to respond. And the good thing about how large this crisis is that there's so many opportunities to respond, so many ways. Farming, education. Do you know that the fourth, if you put two factors together, family planning and giving education to women across the globe, those are the fourth most important and magnitude-changing factors with respect to climate change. Because everywhere there are communities that where women are empowered and receive education, birth rates drop dramatically. Maybe you are already involved in some aspect of helping girls around the world get more education and more sustenance and more power in their communities. You're contributing to the mitigation of climate change. You're helping that. The third thing we can do is to act, drawing the frame a little bit wider. We can act in so many ways, as I've been mentioning. One of the things that may be most important is that we pay attention to where we put energy into the world. God is sending energy to us from the great sun, driving all the different natural systems of nourishment that give us. Where are we putting the energy that we have in our power? And one of the most clear ways we can measure that and know about that is where we put our time and where we put our money. Do you know where your money is invested and what it supports? Do you know that trillions of dollars these days goes to prop up the fossil fuel industries? Goes to continue the cycle of pain and destruction that we're in? Can we stop that overnight? That's going to cause a lot of pain and destruction too. But we can gradually divest from that. We can step away. We can say, I made a mistake. I was there in the 80s. I heard the science. I didn't do anything about it. But I've heard it now. I understand, and I can take an action. I can see where my funds are invested. I can begin to withdraw it. We can educate ourselves in order to find ways that we can respond. And we can respond not only individually in our own households, but we can respond as a community. We can respond as congregations that make big, giant changes. You know, in that beginning of all of our scriptures, where the writers of the book of Genesis tell us that God loved us, loved the creation, and created this garden and put us in it, God says that we are dust people. We are the combination of soil and God's breath. We're not one or the other. We're not the lowly tax collector who's just dirt and rubbish and can't do anything and is just the lowest of the low. And we're not gods. We haven't reached the pinnacle of greatness and become our own God like the Pharisee and can prove it by all the things we've done. We're some kind of beautiful mixture of the two together. The words for Adam and soil are very much the same. Adam, Ahadama. It's like they're the same. We're not a state where there's only one little piece of the puzzle that doesn't have any motors and doesn't have any carbon, and we can go there and escape. All of the state is sacred. All of the land is sacred. And we can live as if it's sacred. We can come back into the true calling of who we are with respect to our natural systems and live in the garden that God created for us. Ultimately, the frames that we continue to enlarge to live in this system go bigger and bigger and bigger, because ultimately the earth is a sphere that can be contained in no frame. And we are three-dimensional people that can never be described by a political cartoon, but can only be described by being beloved and by loving this world that we've been given.